Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. While the LGBT community and its supporters campaign for same-sex marriage rights in the United States, their counterparts in Uganda campaign for their lives. Twice legislation has been introduced that would make homosexuality punishable by death and would force others to report anyone they suspect of being gay or lesbian. Coming up, we'll hear from a documentary filmmaker who has chronicled the issue in Uganda in the film Call Me Kuchu, which will be shown on Sunday at the Gateway Film Center. For more information, check out the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Joining us now by phone from Washington, D.C. to talk about the international issue of gay rights in Africa is Adote Akwe, Managing Director for Government Relations for Amnesty International USA. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
To our listeners, I'd like to ask you a question. If you're from sub-Saharan Africa and familiar with the anti-gay movement there, especially in Uganda, give us a call and tell us what you think. 614-292-8513. Or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Of course, this is not limited to just Uganda. How widespread is the criminalization of homosexuality in Africa?
It is unfortunately quite widespread. Amnesty International released a report earlier this month that noted that there were about 38 countries in sub-Saharan Africa that had either considered or had passed legislation criminalizing same-sex activities. These are bills that, as you mentioned, go from imposing the death penalty to allowing or encouraging people to report people of suspected homosexual activity to, restricting people's access to medical treatment or healthcare, and it's part of an unfortunate trend that not only criminalizes it, but also allows abuse by authorities, by populations or communities, among the general public to ostracize and basically very much discriminate against the LGBT community.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about LGBT rights or lack thereof in sub-Saharan Africa. If you have a question or comment, if you are from that region and want to talk about your thoughts about this issue, give us a call, 614-292-8513. So you said it's a trend. Is it a when did this trend start? Has it always been this way and is just intensifying, or was it a non-issue and there was a spark?
Well, in our report we basically show evidence that just as in other parts of the world, LGBT communities have been part of mankind or humankind for thousands of years. This is not new. It is not an imposed or imported type of behavior, which is what many of the governments in sub-Saharan Africa seem to be using as justification for criminalizing it or for resisting it. What appears to have been a major turning point was the colonization of the continent and the imposition of anti-homosexual legislation by colonial actors, namely the United Kingdom, which introduced the kind of harsh penalties that are still the basis for many of the laws that we are now looking at and that are being used to crack down on these communities. But clearly, in the last 10 years or maybe even longer, maybe 15 years, since 2008, there's been an intensification by countries to either use this as a campaign to mobilize popular support or to sort of delegitimize aspirations of critics or communities that the government is uncomfortable with, or basically just to resist external pressure, which they regard as interference.
Ironically, because it was the colonization, the people who brought colonization that brought it to it, and now in the UK, of course, it's legal. There are no laws against being gay. How does the criminalization work? Let's just talk about Uganda, I guess. Do they have raids on gay bars? Are people targeted individually?
Yes. What you have there is a government that has basically made the issue of LGBT rights a political, blackmail tool. Every year or every other year, there's a bill that's tabled. In other words, it's put forward for consideration that would link the imposition of the death penalty to persons who are found to be guilty of committing same-sex activities. What this has meant, even though the law has not passed, is that it has allowed the security forces and the Ugandan police to go after communities, to go after individuals. Not only the bars, the bar raids that you refer to, but also the activists who are trying hard to protect these individuals from unfair treatment or from ill treatment. And what's worse is that once they are caught up in the hands of the security forces, they then do not have much recourse to challenge their arrests, to go to the court system for justice, or even to take their case to the media, because all of these institutions are in line or are empowered by this law or this pending law that gives them impunity to basically crack down on individuals who are perceived to be or suspected of being LGBT.
I wanted to ask you about the media. In the movie that we're talking about later, there is a publisher or an editor of a tabloid. It's called Rolling Stone. No connection to the Rolling Stone that we're familiar with in the United States and around the world otherwise. Is that a typical media response? They have headlines saying, here are the top 100 homos, hang them. Is that typical, or is that a typical tabloid, coverage of the issue?
It's definitely an unfortunate tabloid trend, but it is indicative of, I think, what is the critical failure, which is the role of government. The African governments that are criminalizing same-sex behavior are basically failing in their obligations to protect the rights and the security, unfortunately, of all of their citizens, irrespective of their sexual orientation or gender. I think this is really the key here, because one can expect, unfortunately, to have extreme views or inappropriate language coming from different sectors of the population, and even from the media, but within certain responsible limits. And that's what governments are supposed to do. They're supposed to basically ensure that communities don't abuse each other, and certainly that they themselves do not commit those abuses. And what's happening is that these governments are saying that there are no laws or no international standards, or that or their own constitutions do not specifically call for them to protect gender orientation or sexual rights. And that's I think the major failure, because it allows them to basically justify discrimination. And discrimination is something that you would find, or opposing or prohibiting discrimination is something that is consistent in not only international human rights standards, but also in most African constitutions, because, after all, this was a region of the world that was colonized until the 1950s, the 1960s. And so discrimination was very much a part of the whole liberation struggle. And that's the irony, and that's, I think, where the media is unfortunately perpetrating, a very, very bad abuse or facilitating the abuses.
To what extent has this affected efforts to fight the spread of HIV and AIDS in Africa?
It is a major problem, because it is almost a stigmatization of people from this community who obviously are very heavily impacted by HIV AIDS, from getting adequate health care, from feeling safe or confident about going to seek HIV AIDS drugs, from studies and analysis being done of, how the LGBT communities are faring under treatment or lack of treatment. It is a major setback, I think, in terms of coordinating not only with the international community and foreign assistance towards HIV/AIDS programs, but even national programs. And yet, it's almost as if there's a justification that, well, this community deserves what it gets, and so we're not only not going to treat them, but we're not going to actually study, research, and add the impact of what they're going through to our national effort on HIV/AIDS. So the African governments are basically hurting themselves.
The international community got involved back when the legislation was put before the parliament, and they started to pressure the Ugandan president to stop the progress of the anti-homosexuality bill. The bill proposes the death penalty for HIV-positive gay men and prison for anyone who fails to turn in a homosexual. Here's the president, hopefully I'm pronouncing this correctly, Yoweri Kaguta Museveni, in the documentary Call Me Kuchu.
The Prime Minister of Canada came to see me. And what was he talking about? Gays. Prime Minister Gordon Brown came to see me. And what was he talking about? Gays. Mrs. Clinton rang me. What was she talking about? Gays.
To what extent does the pressure brought to bear by, you know, Canada, the UK, the United States matter in Uganda and, for that matter, the rest of the region where this is a problem?
It's a very, very interesting question because Uganda does receive quite a lot of foreign assistance. For example, it's a major recipient of U.S. military assistance. And it is also a recipient of development assistance from the United Kingdom. I'm not sure how much the Canadians provide, but clearly these relationships do matter. And while President Museveni, who's been in power for close to 30 years, is fairly indifferent or actually hostile to being dictated to, it's not as simple as I don't care what you think and please go away. The significant thing here is whether the Ugandan government is accountable to the issue of discrimination and by that matter, whether it is indeed accountable for its performance on human rights in general. And there's been a reluctance to push this government as hard as necessary. And I think that the LGBT community issues are the latest flashpoint. You know, there have been other abuses by the Museveni government. But the LGBT issue, I think, is interesting. And you can clearly see that President Museveni and his government are using that to rally national support and to oppose external pressure on any human rights issues, as well as on the LGBT issue itself. So it's a major, I think, fault line or a major front, and it's one where the administration, has been doing quite a lot in terms of doing things diplomatically and behind closed doors, but has not, for some reason, made the public challenge about whether discrimination was something that African governments would be willing to countenance, or what would they do if they were facilitating it, which is where I think the strongest intervention point could be.
My guest is Adote Akwe. He's Managing Director for Government Relations for Amnesty International USA. We'll continue our conversation after this. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
You're mobile, and we are too. 89.7 NPR News is now available anytime, anywhere with the WOSU Public Media mobile app. Get your headlines on demand, listen to live streaming of 89.7, and your favorite podcasts like All Sides with Ann Fisher, Morning Edition, and All Things Considered. It's free and available for iPhone, iPad, and Android devices. Just go to WOSU.org/mobile app and download the app today.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment managers providing financial advice to client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life, at sherringtongroup.com. This is WOSU 89.7 NPR News.
The WOSU Member Card Benefit of the Month for July is the Columbus Children's Theater. Enjoy two-for-one admission all month long. Visit WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. While the LGBT community in the United States and its supporters campaign for same-sex marriage across the country, same-sex marriage rights across the country, their counterparts in Uganda campaign for their lives. Twice, legislation has been introduced that would make homosexuality punishable by death and would force others to report anyone they suspect of being gay or lesbian. Joining us now by phone from California is the writer-director of Call Me Cuchu, a documentary film about the legal persecution of the LGBT community in Uganda, Catherine Fairfax Wright. Call Me Cuchu will be shown on Sunday at the Gateway Film Center. For more information, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here.
Much of the film revolves around the life of veteran LGBT activist David Kato. Where did he come from and how did he come to his activism?
He was from a moderately well-off family. He was fairly well-educated, but, you know, by and large, just a regular Ugandan guy. He was a teacher. But then he left for South Africa in, I think, 1996 or so, and he was there for about 6 years in the 90s. And I think there that's the first time he really witnessed LGBT community sort of en masse and people, you know, being out in the open and supportive of each other and going to church together and all that sort of thing. And I think he was quite inspired by that and very determined once he got back to Uganda to, you know, see it through that his fellow Ugandans were able to experience a similar sense of community.
I was going to ask you, Adote Akwe from Amnesty International, are there other people, I mean, across the continent like him? Are there David Kato's activists in other countries in Africa where they're at the forefront that way?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. There are some wonderful LGBT activists. Bishop Sanyongo is one in Uganda who's very much a basically challenged the religious community to basically accept LGBT as equal and no different from any from heterosexuals. You have a lawyer, Alison Kom in Cameroon, who is not only fighting a government that has major human rights record issues, but is actively attacking people from the LGBT community in Cameroon. And there are places where, you know, governments are moving in the right direction. Mozambique, Mauritius, Sao Tome, Principe, and even South Africa, which has a mixed record in terms of implementation, have taken steps in the right direction. But the trend is still in the negative. And I think the David Kato's need more support, you know, people like him, activists like him. Unfortunately, he is not with us anymore, but people like him, I think, are still very much at risk.
A big push for the proposed ban on LGBT rights in Uganda has come from the United States. Back in 2009 and 2010, evangelicals traveled there to outline the gay movement and an agenda, they said, to recruit children. Catherine, you captured some of their rhetoric in the film. Let's listen real quick.
Christian nation. Jesus must wash this land, and so we've come here to join you. To pray that your government would have wisdom to uphold righteousness in this land. Today, America is losing their religious freedoms. We are trying to restrain an agenda that's going to hurt the nation and hurt.
Catherine Wright, how much, while you were there, how much of an impact did this have on the anti-gay community? Was it just at the churches, or were these larger rallies that were being held where these evangelical activists were speaking?
Well, it was mostly just at churches, but they're pretty massive prayer rallies. And as you see there, I kind of naively expected before I went, I knew that this was going on, but I had anticipated that it might be done if only to kind of cover themselves. I had expected to be done with a little bit more, simile or metaphor or something. But in fact, it's done very bluntly. You see there in that little clip that they're very direct about their mission. These pastors, they say directly that you've been chosen by God to fight back against this homosexual agenda. And while the audiences there might be self-selecting, in that it's the more maybe right-wing Christian Ugandans who go to those rallies, the rhetoric that they're spreading at those rallies has really been spread widely throughout the country because it's been repeated by newspapers and by, through hearsay and this and that. And, they're using these quite powerful fear tactics, indicating that, children are being raped by the dozens in school. They're being given iPhones in exchange for joining the gay team and this sort of thing. Any good parent, or really any parent at all, I think, would take issue with that. And so when it's based on that much misinformation, it just becomes a powerful thing that has really, I think, captivated the general populace's mindset.
Are they still going there? They're still doing this? Is this something that's going on throughout that region?
I think it's done with less frequency now and maybe less overtly, but I would be very surprised if it has stopped altogether.
What do we know about what the agenda of the American evangelicals is in Africa? What do they just want to stop it there and that's where it ends?
Yeah, I think, some people feel like they have lost the battle here, and so they have sort of tried to nip it in the bud abroad in places like Uganda. It's a heavily Christian society. It's an English-speaking country. It's a fairly well-developed country with an infrastructure that can spread their rhetoric with some ease. I think there's various reasons why it's really caught on in Uganda. But it seems like they just feel like this is a place where they can win the battle.
It's easy to see, the appeal of the LGBT activist David Keita, who's the primary focus of the film. He's a very interesting and fun person to listen to. How did you come to follow his story? And I wanted to know about whether it was dangerous at all being with him.
Mm-hmm. Really, at that time, he was sort of the most openly, we started filming early 2010, and by then he was really one of the few members of the LGBT community willing to speak to anyone. And so by default, he sort of became the media liaison for international journalists and sort of the spokesperson for the community there. And so that's kind of the capacity in which we first met him. We met up with him on our first day. And he, gave us lots of names and numbers and information and who had what to tell about what aspect of the LGBT issue in Uganda. And but the more we spent time with him, the more we were just captivated by his personality. He was, fiercely intelligent and funny and just a great guy to be around, very charismatic. And, it just became clear that we wanted him as our protagonist. It's actually, sort of surprising maybe how little we ever felt our safety threatened. I think there's various reasons for that. One is that Uganda actually has a pretty strong sense of freedom of the press. There is some sort of general understanding that It's common practice for things to be documented and for cameras to be around. And, you know, I think also we weren't really trying to expose anything that people were, you know, wanting to keep under wraps. People felt very strongly in their position on the issue. You know, and at one point in time, I don't think they necessarily, you know, no one person knew who else we were filming with. And so, you know, it just was sort of in the moment. Someone like Giles, the managing editor of the newspaper who we film, you know, in that moment, he was there with a camera in front of him asking him to talk about, you know, his feelings on the issue. And so he was very content to.
Yeah, you did a series, or it might have been just one interview, but it appeared, felt like a series of interviews with the publisher of that, I believe, publisher, the editor of the gay-bashing tabloid Rolling Stone.
Right.
He laughed a lot at his exploits, which I thought was interesting. He reminded me of like a teenage boy, kind of nervous and laughing about something that he knows is bad, but he laughs about it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much exactly how it felt. I mean, he is a young guy, too. He's like right out of college, and I think he just saw something that he just kind of hopped on the bandwagon because he saw that it would sell, and he was happy to contribute to it if it meant that, you know, it would increase his popularity as a journalist and as a managing editor. So, yeah, it was kind of disturbing to spend time with him hearing that kind of stuff.
What is your sense about the extent to which the opposition to the LGBT, you know, community and people is driven by politics or an opportunity, for instance, like the Rolling Stone editor? And how much people are driven by a fierce religious idea?
I mean, I think it's very much a combination of all of the above. You know, a lot of people think that it's used as a you know, a tool for distracting the Ugandan populace from other matters at hand, you know, other sort of maybe failures of the government, other things that they might otherwise be very concerned about, you know, when there's this other bigger thing that they can, that the government can stir up, you know, for people to be more concerned about rather than, you know, wages or, you know, anything else. You know, I think it's an easy out for them. You know, the religious side of it is also a really big thing. I mean, you know, in a community like that, you know, it's not set up to religious life in general is not set up to question the words of your pastor. You know, you're just supposed to believe your pastor. A pastor is someone who's sort of a vessel for the words of God. And when the pastors are calling, you know, for violence against these people in the fashion that they are, or even when it's not that to that degree, you know, when they're just calling for them to change or for, you know, them to be kicked out of the community, you know, it's just a very powerful thing in a community like that.
Adote Akwe mentioned earlier Bishop Christopher Sanyonjo, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who has been expelled from the Anglican Church in Uganda for his defense of the LGBT community. How did the bishop come to his stance on gay rights? How did he arrive at that place?
Well, he's actually, you know, has felt this way and has been willing to stand up for the community long before, you know, they were organized, the LGBT community and the, you know, pro-gay rights community was organized anywhere near to the degree that it is now. He was, you know, ostracized from the Anglican Church many, many years ago when he refused to back down from counseling LGBT people. I think he's just an incredibly wise man, very knowledgeable. He has his PhD in human sexuality. He just has a very thorough understanding and a strong theological defense of human sexuality. And, you know, he's an incredible asset for the LGBT community because of that.
One event at the heart of the film is David Kato's campaign to challenge that tabloid Rolling Stone in the courts. Can you tell us what happened with that and how that came about?
Sure. Well, I mean, there was some history of these kind of outings in the newspapers, pretty brutal outings where they would print the photographs of, known, sort of in quotes, members of the LGBT community, mm-hmm. Their places of work, their addresses, you know, in the Rolling Stone, even going so far as having little captions next to the photos that said hang them and things like that. And that had been happening in other papers as well. But it finally got to the point where the LGBT community was, you know, very heavily threatened by these. A lot of threats were coming in because of those outings, and they just had enough. So three of them took that publication to court, which is, you know, something that you see in the film, you know, mm-hmm. for their constitutional, they felt that their constitutional right to privacy had been violated. You know, so that's another thing that the LGBT community has been using. Uganda has a fairly strong constitution and a pretty independent judiciary that is has some track record of upholding constitutional rights for their citizens regardless of their sexuality. And so that's one of the ways in which the LGBT community has been, you know, fighting their fight.
I was wondering, because if these laws, the law has not been passed, right? The proposed,
no,
yeah.
It's currently still lingering.
In the legislature and parliament?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So regarding the judiciary, in that case, they stuck up for, you know, they supported David Kato. They ruled on his side. Is it possible that if it did become law, that the judiciary has the same kind of power it does, say, in the United States, where it could find a law like that unconstitutional?
That's a good question. I don't know specifically, but I would imagine that might be the case. But I think they would also be under tremendous pressure not to do that. But I guess it's theoretically possible, although I'm probably not the best person to ask about that.
Adote Akwe, any thoughts about that? I'm sorry, Adote Akwe? Okay, well, it looks like we've lost him, which might explain something. We'll just take a break then and keep Catherine Wright with us. She's the writer and director of Call Me Kuchu. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from OSU's Department of Neurology conducting a planned emergency study to see if progesterone can limit the effects of a traumatic brain injury or TBI. Details on the PROTECT study, including a community opinion survey, and how to opt out of the study are at protectiii.com.
Friday night on WOSU-TV, Martin Scorsese explains how growing up watching the movies of director Ilya Kazan became a life-changing experience on American Masters, A Letter to Ilya. Scorsese explains both Kazan's life and his own while reflecting on the impact of movies like On the Waterfront and East of Eden. Learn more about the controversial life of Ilya Kazan on American Masters, Friday night at 9 on WOSU-TV.
Support comes from the Homeport Nobo on Long condominiums, offering homeownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring green design buildings within walking distance of local stores and restaurants. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long.
Support 89.7 NPR News at $85 and receive the WOSU member card. The member card is good for dining and admission discounts at more than 200 member card partners in Central Ohio. Visit WOSU.org/membercard for more information. And thanks for your membership in 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In January 2011, David Kato, considered the grandfather of the Kuchus in Uganda, was bludgeoned to death with a hammer. At his funeral, gay rights opponents protested. Family and friends moved the casket to another location where Bishop Senyogo, since expelled from the Anglican Church of Uganda, said these words.
God created you. God is on your side. This is the gospel I am preaching. My church was not happy with what I say because they wanted me to condemn. But God showed me, no. I am free because I know the truth. And I will stand for that truth. So please, we pray for the soul of David Kato. I've known him, I've respected him, and he's a love of human race. And that is the best thing God left us. God loves you, Kato. He knows you, he brought you to the world, and you have done your work. So rest in peace.
Catherine Wright, that's from, of course, your documentary, Call Me Kuchu. That must have been a pretty shocking thing to happen. It happened about 3 or 4 weeks after you started filming?
No, it happened a year after.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah, okay.
Of course, it was a huge tragedy, very devastating on a lot of levels. But we also, quite immediately felt a strong responsibility, Malika and I, to push David's story as far and wide as possible, and knew that the only way to do that was to make a film that stood on its own as a film. And, so immediately had to just start wrestling with the idea of how to continue with our film, in which the protagonist was no longer able to participate. How do we make it something that people will watch and will talk about and will learn from? Because we just really felt we owed that to David.
And the film, Call Me Kuchu, documentary film about the legal persecution of the LGBT community in Uganda. It will be shown on Sunday at the Gateway Film Center. For more information, check out our link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from a listener. They ask, why have the human rights organizations not targeted groups like the Family Research Council, which originates here in America? This fundamentalist support of the Ugandan Kill the Gays bill is spelled out in Jeff Charlotte's book, The Family. But I don't recall having seen any outrage in the American media regarding this organization's stance on the issue. Adote Akwe from Amnesty International. Any thoughts on that? Okay, we're not getting him through for some reason. Are you there, Adote?
Yes, I'm here. Can
okay.
you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Thanks.
Great. I was going to say that the primary responsibility is the government. The governments around the world are lobbied or influenced by external actors, and it is, while all of the different actors here, with the case of the Ugandan bill, need to be targeted, the primary one has to be the government of Uganda, and because it basically has the legal obligation, and it also has the political jurisdiction to make a difference, and so there have to be ways for us to change that, and the Ugandan government has got to be answering and hearing voices from the Ugandan citizens, which means we have an educational job to do with the people of Uganda about how unfair and unacceptable the discrimination and ill treatment of the LGBT community is. I think that's where we have been trying to focus our attention. We do think that an international campaign and pressure is very badly needed for this, but I'm not disagreeing with the need for pressure on groups like the one that was mentioned, but in the end, if we don't get the Ugandan government to basically say the rights of all Ugandan citizens are equal and have to be protected and respected, we aren't going to get anywhere.
Catherine Wright, are gay rights, LGBT rights activists from the United States and other Western countries where it's legal, are they working in Africa to oppose this?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they have been for some time. I think the main strategy is how do we enable LGBT activists within those countries to sort of help themselves. And so they've been doing, a lot of, they have become in a very short amount of time, very sophisticated activists. Some of that has come through trainings and workshops and networking and, you know, resources and stuff, you know, that has been made available to them by LGBT rights organizations outside of Uganda, you know, many in Europe and in America. But I think it has become clear that the best strategy is to empower the activists rather than come in as foreign activists and try to do something on your own.
How did the community, how has it rallied since the death of David Kato?
Well, in the immediate aftermath, there were sort of contradicting tensions at play, as you might imagine, mm-hmm. because, you know, the ultimate threat had finally been realized. And so, you know, there was a lot, really a lot going on, a lot of security concerns. You know, a lot of people were identified by their presence at the funeral because it was played on national television. And so mothers were finding out that their children were there and kicking them out of the home, or bosses were firing their employees for their presence at the funeral and that kind of thing. But, you know, at the same time, there was a really palpable sense of the community really being galvanized by his death and feeling all the more pressure and responsibility to push the movement, you know, further and further. And, you know, and there's been a bit of sort of changing of the guards in terms of the LGBT activists. Some have had to flee. Naomi, who you see in our film, is no longer living in the country. She's was granted asylum in Sweden. Hmm. And some of the other leading activists have had to leave. You know, but what they left behind, you know, has certainly been picked up by others. And you know, and they're kind of coming out of the woodworks in increasing numbers, and you know, growing in their organization.
In July, when President Obama visited Kenya, he had a less than warm welcome because of his call to decriminalize homosexuality. He was in Senegal when the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the federal ban on same-sex marriage. I was wondering, you know, just in general, when the president visits like that, people expect it to be a joyous occasion in Africa, but it's definitely not affected their opposition on this issue.
I think that's true.
Adote?
Sorry, I'll go first, Catherine, mm-hmm. then I'll stop.
Yeah.
I think, you know, the president's trip, I think, his trip to Africa should be viewed with the same kind of lenses and sophistication as trips to other parts of the world. And so there were going to be parts of it that would be joyous, and indeed there was clearly a sense of having a son come home. But it's also a continent with major issues and major challenges. And, you know, Amnesty had written to President Obama to urge him to raise the issue of LGBT protection and the obligation of African governments to protect the LGBT community and to educate the public about not discriminating. And so, you know, at the press conference where he mentioned, where he commented on the Supreme Court ruling, mm-hmm. He spoke, I think, eloquently to it, but it would have been nicer for him to have gone a little bit further because it wasn't raised in the bilateral meeting with President Saul. And we were not sure how much it was raised in his meetings in Tanzania or in South Africa. I think this president was unique in that he would have been one person who would have been able to say, no one is perfect, but there are some issues that we all need to be honest about and we need to address. And I think that that's what we were hoping would come out from this visit. And we got some of it, but we certainly needed much more.
Catherine Wright, much talk about what's happening in the West when activists in Africa and in Uganda, the people you were working with at the time, were they looking to the United States? And or is it so far away, so different, and is such a different template that it's not very helpful?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, you know, I think if anything, they're kind of looking back towards how the fight was originally started here. You know, the movement for LGBT rights, you know, things like issues of marriage equality and stuff certainly aren't on the top of their minds. So I think present-day activism is less relevant for them in some ways. But I think they also feel like, you know, things need to be done on Ugandan terms and in Ugandan ways rather than, you know, whatever else has been done abroad. And I think that's part of why they're advocating more for, you know, less for the public shaming tactics these days and more for sort of private diplomacy efforts and, you know, or someone like Senyojo taking aside a few members of the clergy and speaking to them, you know, in a sort of private and contained fashion about, you know, theological reasons why the church should be more accepting of the LGBT community. You know, and similarly, you know, advocating more for, you know, a senator to maybe take a member of parliament aside and talk about it in a meeting so that there isn't this sort of reactionary response, you know, for them to exercise their sovereignty as they see fit and pass whatever laws they see fit and who are you to tell us what to do sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in some ways, I think there are a lot of parallels. The rhetoric, there's a lot of parallels in the rhetoric, on really on both sides. You know, the anti-gay camp is sort of very stuck in this mentality of because you can't reproduce, you recruit, which is, you know, what was said a lot, you know, a generation ago in, you know, the fight for LGBT rights here in the U.S.
We have an email from Edward. He said, it is important to acknowledge the fact that homosexuality will not be accepted as the norm in many parts of Africa overnight, especially just because developed nations like the U.S. and England are suddenly making huge strides in accepting and advancing the rights of their LGBT communities. It will take time to win hearts and minds. There is just no way to skip this step. Thank you for talking about it, though. This is key to winning hearts and minds.
Go ahead, Catherine.
I was just going to say, I think that, I mean, that's a very valid point, as it is, you know, and when you're changing hearts and minds on any issue, it takes time. But I think one sort of ray of hope is that it's important to keep in mind that the hatred, sort of vitriol that is so present right now in Uganda is not something that's deep-seated in their society. It's not something that's been around for 50 or 100 or 300 years. It's something that has been stirred up in, you know, within the last decade. And so as quickly as the populace has come to fear these people, I think it's within, you know, reason that they might come to accept them in, you know, with, it, you know, on a, in a similar time frame.
I think Catherine is right. It really is, and I would also just reiterate, it's governance, and whether governments there actually view this as a legal obligation to be the protectors of individual rights and choice, and that's not just on LGBT issues, but on human rights in general. So it's clearly there are advances and there are opportunities and there's stuff to build on, and of course there are activists that we need to protect and support and empower in those countries, which is why we need to also protect the space for civil society.
On the phone, Reverend Virginia from St. John's Church in Columbus, thank you for joining us.
Yes, hi, Anne. We just wanted to let your listening audience know that we are going to be screening the film God Loves Uganda at our church, St. John's Church at 59 East Mound Street on Monday evening, July 22nd.
What's the movie
about? At 7 p.m.
What's the film about?
The film is about the role of the religious right in whipping up the frenzy of intolerance against homosexuals in Uganda, also resulting in death of activists and the persecution of religious leaders who were preaching intolerance. So we decided that as a welcoming and affirming, an open and affirming church in Columbus, we wanted to show the film and then offer discussion afterwards, facilitated by clergy, about the role of religion in this entire debate. We feel very strongly that religious intolerance has resulted in death, and that it's important for American religious leaders to take a stand in solidarity with our LGBT community, and to let folks know that the American right, as they are portrayed in some of these films, is not the whole story about what's happening in religion in America with respect to the LGBT issue.
Catherine Wright, can the evangelical impact on all of this be understated or overstated, I should say?
I mean, I think perhaps not when dealing with American audiences. I mean, I do think it's important for them to. I think one of the more concerning things is how little some of these parishioners really know about the weight of the words of their pastors in places like Uganda, and you know, what's happening because of it, and how far I think it has come, has sort of deviated from you know, Christianity at its best. And I think another thing that's good about, you know, that I think plays well maybe for more religious audiences about Call Me Kuchu and you know, most likely God Loves Uganda as well, is that you know, the LGBT community by and large in Uganda are themselves quite Christian. You know, they really just want to be good Christians who are allowed to, you know, who go to church every Sunday and are, you know, respectful and engaged members of their society, and they're just really not being allowed to be that. And you know, I think it's not at all the case that religion is the bad guy in this situation. It's that it's both the good guy and the bad guy, and that leads to a lot of complications, but all the more reason to talk about it.
Well, Catherine Wright, thanks for joining us today. Call Me Kuchu will be shown on Sunday at the Gateway Film Center. For more information, go to the link at our website, WOSU.org/allsides. And Adote Akwe from Amnesty International, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.